Hello, my name's Tom Boone. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest goings-on from the world of commercial aviation. This week I'm joined by Reese from Head for Points for an in-depth discussion on the return of Etihad's Airbus A380. So Reese, welcome to the show.
Hi Tom, it's good to be back and thanks for having me.
No worries. I mean, it's like we haven't been apart for the last 48 hours or so, isn't it?
I know, and here we are on a Zoom call recording a podcast. We should have done this in Abu Dhabi, to be honest.
To be honest, that would have been a good idea, but hey, you know, I'll take all the Reese I can get. But yeah, no, it's been a fun couple of days really, because we spent the last couple of days, Tuesday, Wednesday really, and Thursday morning, flying to and from Abu Dhabi in a whirlwind schedule. How was it for you?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I've definitely done crazier trips. So actually, you know, as things go, a one-night trip is not the worst thing I've ever done. It was actually my first time flying Etihad, so that was something I was really looking forward to, seeing how it compares to other airlines, especially the Middle Eastern carriers. And I have to say, I really enjoyed it, actually. You know, overall, I thought it was a really good flight. It's just, you know, it's good to have the A380 back, really.
Definitely, yeah. I'd think I'd have to agree with you there. It wasn't just a flight, though. There was so much, you know, a lot of the carriers that have been bringing the A380s back have just done it very quietly and without fanfare. And Etihad sort of took a different approach and said, we're doing things differently. And this started even when we got to, before we checked in, we were already seeing this.
Yeah, I mean, they had banners out. They had, I mean, basically the entire Etihad UK office was there in Heathrow, little chocolates. You know, it was really cool actually to see that much enthusiasm for kind of what is quote unquote just a change of aircraft. You know, I think the A380 really is loved by a lot of passengers for good reason. I love it as well. It's so quiet. You know, it's unbelievable really when the engines spool up on the runway and you take off. You know, it's barely audible. I think it remains the quietest passenger aircraft in service, which is impressive given it's now, you know, 20-year-old technology.
Yeah. I mean, well, we were sat right where the engines were on the upper deck and it was... couldn't hear a thing.
Definitely. I mean, maybe for the benefit of our listeners, we should backtrack a bit and explain what actually happened. So Tom and I, we were invited by Etihad on EY12, flight EY12 on Tuesday morning. And this was their first A380 service from London to Abu Dhabi. Obviously, the flight had come in from Abu Dhabi, so it wasn't technically the first passenger flight.
The second one.
but it was the second one. It was the first A380 service they've operated as a passenger service in, I think, 40 months. So the last A380 they flew was the 24th of March 2020, which was obviously just as COVID was kind of closing in. And then I think, you know, everyone went into lockdown shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I remember that around about that date, the UAE government actually just closed the borders completely. Both Etihad and Emirates were grounded completely.
Yeah, it's kind of when you think back on 3 years ago, you know, it's kind of wild what happened. And I think we've moved on so much now. Like, it almost feels like we're back to normal now.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like a fever dream looking back at, you know, just how suddenly everything kind of changed and ended. Like, flying just kind of ceased. I remember being so bullish about COVID and thinking, oh no, it's not going to have a big impact. Actually, I was coming back from Australia on one of Qantas's last flights back from Australia to London before all those flights ceased. So it was kind of a very, very odd time, but it's, you know, it's kind of good to have the A380 back again and back to normality in a way.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, this, it's a 7-year-old aircraft by this point, but in reality, from the passenger point of view, it's really only a 3-year-old aircraft because they had it for about three and a half years. And then it's been in storage for an almost equal amount of time. So it's still quite a new aircraft.
It is. And you can really see that in the cabins as well. I mean, they obviously don't look brand new, but they are in a very good condition. And what I found really impressive was that despite the seats being, you know, a design from, I think, 2014, this is the business studio, the business class seat is, I think, was unveiled by Etihad in 2014. You know, so they're almost 10 years old now. These seats are still really competitive. You know, they're really spacious. I found the seat itself, you know, really wide, actually, which is great for me because I have quite wide shoulders, especially compared to some of the more herringbone seats. I felt like the width really helped. And okay, it doesn't have a door, which a lot of modern seats do have, but actually, you know, how often do you use a door? Not that often. So despite that, I think it worked very well. The IFE was really good as well. Again, you know, it's obviously not 4K, which a lot of airlines are doing. It doesn't have Bluetooth connectivity, which most, you know, most of the recent seat reveals does have. But overall, I think really impressive seat and still holds its own with, you know, seats that are being revealed more recently.
Yeah, and I mean, they managed to get this sort of 1-2-1 squeezed in as well with the direct aisle access for everyone. And I know some of their competitors just down the road haven't even got this on the 777 yet. So,
but
let's talk a little bit about the lounge in Heathrow, because we managed to somehow squeeze into there as guests of the airline. And that was quite an interesting one. I read your review about that this morning, and only have a couple of bones to pick with it. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, we got in there. We were the first people in there because we got there ridiculously early.
We arrived at 6:10 in the morning. I mean, bear in mind that Etihad check-in doesn't open until 6 a.m.
Yeah.
The lounge doesn't open until 6 a.m. We managed to check in basically straight away. There was no queue at Fast Track Security in Terminal 4, so we basically breezed through, walked the minute or two it takes to get to Gate 10, which is where the lounge is.
And I think it took longer in the elevator than walking to the lounge.
Yeah, it probably did. No, it was really quick, and it was nice to be the first in there, to be honest, because, you know, it helps to take lots of photos without disturbing the other passengers.
Yeah. And then we had our ex-Benedict, or ex-Royale in your case.
Yes. Very delicious.
Very tasty.
That actually surprised me. You know, I hadn't actually read any reviews of the Etihad Lounge in London before I went on that flight. And often I do a bit of research so I know what to expect. I didn't do that this time. So I didn't really have a kind of image in my mind of what the lounge would have. So I was actually really pleasantly surprised to see, you know, they have a dining room, a proper dining room with an a la carte menu, which is available to all passengers, business class and first class. Because I believe in the past, I understand that it was restricted to first class.
Okay.
So that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. It now seems to be...
I mean, with the number of tables they've got in there, though, you know, if it was restricted to first class, you would have one person per,
people,
like,
yeah,
10 per tables or something.
No, definitely. So I was really impressed with that. I thought the space was really well utilized. It's not the biggest lounge. You know, it's fairly compact in a way, but they've kind of divided it into separate rooms with these kind of nice dividers, and there's a lot of different seating. The only thing I found really was missing from the lounge was a view. Unfortunately, that's something that Etihad can't really do anything about.
I quite enjoyed watching the ITER 320 departing.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't an unrestricted view, unfortunately, and that... You know, in the dining room, you're overlooking, the lovely floor-to-ceiling windows, but you're looking at the jet bridge.
Yeah.
The jet bridge kind of goes right in front of you lengthwise. So that's a shame. But again, you know, you can't really do that. Etihad gets the space they're given from Heathrow, I guess.
Yeah.
So otherwise, a very lovely lounge. You had a shower.
Yeah, I went in the shower and I was quite impressed overall, you know, like a shower is a shower. I had a couple of little criticisms. One was this egg-shaped toilet, because I wanted to sit down when I was getting changed and you just couldn't without sliding off. You know, but the soap was nice enough. The shower had a sort of decent pressure. The only other thing as well was, you know, maybe a couple of the little amenities that you might like to have while you're showering, like a comb or a toothbrush, weren't readily available. But yeah, my biggest criticism of the lounge, though, was that they had in one of the display cabinets all of the models of the planes flying to Heathrow, but they missed putting the A380 back in there.
Ah, well, hopefully they'll put that back in.
Yeah, if you're listening. but yeah, so then we left the lounge after we sat there for maybe 2 hours, I think.
Quite a while.
And then left the lounge. We were the first people to leave the lounge as well, because Etty had arranged for us to get on the plane ever so slightly before everybody else. I remember the check-in lady was like, why are you already leaving? You've got so much more lounge time. but yeah, then we managed to get on there and have a quick look around first class and business class and economy.
Yes, we did. I mean, we didn't have long. We had about 5 minutes, but it was good to kind of have a little peek into all the different cabins. The residence aside, obviously the residence is probably the closest thing you can get to flying a private jet on a commercial plane. So, you know, very impressive. Obviously, the service has changed slightly from what it was before COVID, but I still think a very impressive product. But even the first apartments, and they have 9 of them on the A380, you know, were exceptionally spacious. You know, these are some of the most spacious first-class seats you'll probably get on an aircraft anywhere in the world. And again, you know, an older product, but still really impressive, which just goes to show how ahead of its time Etihad was when they introduced these seats back in 2014, 2015.
Yeah, no, it was really, like you said, but what I loved most about when we managed to look around the cabin, and also not just looking around the cabin before, but also during the flight, was this lounge space that we had access to as business class passengers.
Yeah, I mean, my seat was actually, I was in 8K, which is right next to the lounge, which you might think might be a problem, but actually everyone in the lounge was very well behaved.
Yeah, and I mean, that curtain dividing it was quite sturdy, I think. I don't know if that's the right word.
It's still a curtain, right? It's not a door. I think the lounge space is an interesting one, because I thought it was underutilized, actually, on the flight. I think it's too big. Hmm. You know, if you're trying to have a conversation with someone, it's kind of circular space, and you have this big circular table in the middle, you're actually too far away from people sitting on the other side to have a normal conversation. So you're really only talking to people sat next to you.
From my point of view, it was very much a place to go and get a quick drink rather than somewhere to spend the whole flight.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, I don't think I saw anyone spend that much time in it. I mean, there were people coming and going a bit, but certainly compared to, you know, the kind of more bar-y layout you'd find on other airlines, on, like, you know, Emirates A380 or Qatar's A380, it didn't feel quite as conducive to conversation or meeting people. And I think partly that's also because there isn't a bar.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a self-service thing, but we didn't dare touch it because the crew just came and said, like, oh, what can we get you? And
yeah, the crew were very, very attentive. Yeah. Basically, you know, very good in offering drinks. So we didn't actually have to get our own drinks, really. But yeah, I think the lack of a kind of focal point to that lounge area doesn't help.
Mm. And you were mentioning when we were chatting in Abu Dhabi as well about the natural light, or the lack thereof, in the lounge.
Yeah. Yeah, again, you know, it doesn't have any windows. So on a day flight, when the cabin is flooded with natural light, which is lovely, you go to the lounge and it feels like you're stepping into the night time. And when, to be honest, when I'm on a flight, I want to, most of the time, if it's daylight outside, I want to be, you know, having that daylight. So it's kind of, again, it's one of those things. I don't know if they've just blocked those windows on the A380. I guess they have. Normally, you'd, or if that's standard, that there are no windows on that particular portion of the
aircraft. Well, I mean, certainly on one side, you know, maybe there's windows there, but there's that self-service bar we were talking about in front of it. And then you had the seating on the other side, which goes quite high. So I guess, you know, who knows? We'll come back and look at that. But in terms of, you know, this whole service of the flight, you know, I was very impressed, because that's not a small business class cabin. But
no, there's 70 seats.
Yeah, I know. It's maybe 75-80% of the upper deck. It's insanely big. But I still found the service to be very... I don't know the word, but it was very personalized. You know, the crew still took the time to get to know us. The meal service, I think, took a little bit longer, but I wouldn't criticize that, because this was the first time they were dealing with this in 3 years. It was probably, for some of the crew, the first time they're ever dealing with this plane.
Exactly.
You know, I'm sure once they get back into the swing of things, that will get a lot more streamlined as well.
Yeah, they have to get used to a whole new galley setup, a whole new process for you know, offering that in-flight service. I thought the service was absolutely incredible. We had a very good flight attendant on our aisle. I think she was called Joanna or Joanne. Really lovely. And just, yeah, really, really good. I think actually that's one of the things that really impressed me the most about our flight was actually the service, level of service. Just, you know, really attentive, constantly asking if they can bring us drinks or top-ups. So that was, you know, really, really good. The food, I thought, was exceptional as well.
That, especially the sandwich that we had, the beef
sandwich. Yes, the steak sandwich.
The steak sandwich,
is sort of an Etihad classic.
That's what I've heard.
And that's more of a snack. But for my kind of main course, which was lunch on this flight, I had the mezze starter, which is obviously very common in all the Middle Eastern carriers. They basically all offer a version of the mezze. And I have to say, this one was really good. I think it may be my favourite onboard mezze. It was really good. And then I had the cod main course, which again was really good. Came with a kind of parsnip puree, a kind of lobster bisque sauce. Very tasty. I don't normally go for fish on flights because it can be a bit stinky. But I mean, this was really tasty and well worth it. So I'm glad I did.
And I went for the pie, which was, again, it wasn't from the main menu, but it was also from the snacking menu. But it really tickled my fancy. And I was like, oh, I want that. And I failed to correctly eat it because it was on the menu as an open top pie. And the it had like a pastry lid, which wasn't attached to the pie. So I kind of assumed, because it was a little bit darker in the cabin, a lot of passengers had put their blinds down and I only had one window. You'd blocked all of yours, even my half window. And, you know, I thought the base of this pie was like a ceramic dish or something that had the filling in and then the thing put on top. So I failed at that because I ate the filling and the pastry. But it was, despite not eating it in the correct manner, it was still very tasty. I guess the reason for that maybe is, I guess, a sealed pie wouldn't cook so nicely on a plane, or who knows?
Yeah, potentially. Who knows? I have to ask the catering people about that.
Watch
this
space.
There were a lot of Doe & Co. Staff swarming around the flight just before we departed, actually.
So, yeah, they were basically taking up the lounge to themselves, just making sure that everything was exactly as it should be.
All the food had been, you know, catered for on board, and
I mean, just doing that must be no mean feat, because you've got to. It's not just about getting it's the huge volume on board, but then it's all got to be in the right place. And
I mean, I don't know how they managed to cater for what is basically 500-ish. Mm. Is it 500? It must be.
I think it's about 470, roughly. Yeah. Not exactly.
You know, passengers, that's a lot of food and a lot of meals.
I mean, a lot of that, though, like 400 odd of that is the economy cabin.
It's economy, but even so, I mean,
it's a lot of meals, but it's a lot less variation than what we had, so.
You know, that's, if you think about those galleys, they're tiny. I don't know how they can even turn around in them without knocking something over. So it's impressive that they are able to do all that.
And we also, before the flight, because we had a delay, unfortunately, again, not Etihad's fault, so I won't rip into them there, but that was because of the weather over eastern Ukraine. ATC wouldn't let us take off because it was too congested. So the captain, Jihad, invited us into the cockpit to have a little chat before departure. And then we also went to see him in the cockpit after departure, and it was really nice just to have that sort of contrasting like opinion from him, because at the start he was very excited.
It was like a pre-game and a debrief, wasn't it?
Yeah. and he's one of the oldest in terms of service captains at Etihad, so it's I guess a real honour for him. He was saying he brought this particular A380 out of the desert back in March or so. So it's not just like he was on the first A380 flight. He's been through this whole journey, so I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was lovely to meet him, and actually my first time on an A380 flight deck, which is huge.
Oh yeah,
so much space. You could do yoga in it. I mean, it is massive. So that was very cool. And obviously, if you don't know this, the flight deck on an A380 is on the lower deck rather than the upper deck.
It's kind of in the middle, but you access it from the lower deck.
Yeah, sort of. And then on the upper deck, above the flight deck, you have the kind of, often it's the lavs, or in this case, it's actually the residence. So that's kind of a unique offering for Etihad, is to repurpose that space, which often many airlines choose to turn into very large lavatories. Etihad has used one side for its three-room suite, the residence. So it has a kind of small double bed at the front. Then you have your own private toilet and shower. And then you have this, obviously, living room space with two seats and a big TV and all that. So that was quite cool. A very good use of space, I think.
I'd love to fly in it one day, but that's probably never going to happen.
Yes, we can all hope and dream. First class, I think, would be very cool. Just the spaciousness, you know, it's...
Yeah, I walked into... Because they call them the apartment, I think, don't they?
It's like first class apartment.
Yeah, and just sitting in one of these, I was blown away at how much space there was in it. That was something else already by itself, you know. Forgetting about the residence already, this first class was a game apart. But they have so much space, they can do that. You know, I'm not sure that on a sort of 777 or 787, if you had a first class layout.
The 787s do have first class on Etihad. But it's a smaller seat, really. It's I believe it's a 1-2-1 layout, so it's much, much smaller. Whereas, you know, this is huge.
Yeah, and I mean, I think in terms of the sort of real estate that the seat gets was fairly similar on the 787 to what we had in business. Whereas, you know, you could lie lengthwise with your head by the window on this sofa. That's how much space you had.
Yeah, I mean, that sofa turns into a bed, right? Yeah. So if you think about the aircraft, rather than laying forward to back, you would lay left to right, effectively, from your
head would be in the aisle. Airport.
Yes, well, there you go. You know, your head in the aisle and your feet in the window, or vice versa. So it has to, you know, each side is probably like 2 meters, or just over 2 meters wide for each suite, each apartment.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I say, you know, I really enjoyed being on the flight. So a huge thank you to Etihad for making that all happen. And
so many of, you know, people were so excited about it, Etihad staff, non-Etihad staff. I actually was checking out the business class lounge in Abu Dhabi on our way home, last night. And one of the lounge staff started talking to me about the A380 return, and I was like, oh, I was on that flight, you know. He was really excited about it. So
I had a similar thing on my 787 flight back to Frankfurt, because, you know, I was just sat there and the cabin crew lady came up to me, and all of a sudden she says, oh, Mr. Boone, you were on the first A380 flight. I don't know where she saw this, but you know, that was pretty cool that they took the time to say that, and they noticed that and were excited enough to share it.
Definitely. So that's, you know, the whole airline is really excited about bringing these aircraft back, and I think rightly so. And so I guess, you know, they've got the first one back now. The second one, Jihad told us, would return to service next week, I believe.
I think so, yeah. 29th. No, yeah. It's coming soon.
Coming soon. Yeah. And then there's two more aircraft. So Etihad used to have 10 A380s. They're bringing four back. And that will enable them to run three daily London Abu Dhabi flights on the A380 and have a spare aircraft as well.
I do wonder, though, if, you know, we could see more come back as they look at this and think, wow.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised. You know, our flight there was totally full.
Yeah, that was fully booked.
100% full. My flight back, I think, was equally as full, or, you know, maybe not quite, but, you know, virtually the same. I didn't, when I was walking down the cabin, it certainly felt like every single seat was occupied. So there's clearly demand for these flights. You know, we've seen a big capacity crunch happen. Thanks to COVID, a lot of aircraft have been retired. So there's a lot less capacity in the system, especially kind of going east towards Asia at the moment. So I think bringing these A380s back is a really good and wise decision. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll see more.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think that's about all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Reese.
No, thank you for having me.
We hope you enjoyed listening to our podcast, and we welcome any feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com. For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating on your favorite podcast player. Thanks for listening, and bye.